The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
Keeping you up to date with everything rugby league. This is the final hooter on Radio General.
Yes, it's that time again. It's my first, my last, my everything. My name's Dave Parkinson, by the way, and I'm delighted to be joined on the other end of the phone line. We've got the gremlins out of the way, and it's Craig Cook. Craig, great to have you along for the ride, mate.
Yeah, no problem, mate. It's good to speak to you, mate.
Now, the idea of these interviews is to do, well, as it says on the tin, really, what you remember from your first game as a professional, your last game as a professional, and everything else in between. But before I touch on that, let's start from the very beginning, because what was your journey into rugby league?
I first just started playing when I was 8. I just stumbled across it early. Some kids was training on a field where I lived, and I just joined in and pretty much just loved it from day one.
And which club was that for, who you joined?
It was for Biggin Hill, which was just a local school, which I used to go, junior school that I used to go to. And I joined Biggin Hill, and then from there I joined British Gas and moved on through the age group to British Gas and onto East Hull.
Now, I mean, Hull at that time had like so many different amateur teams, didn't it?
Yeah, I remember back then, you know, there was probably, I would say, 25 teams just in the open age league.
Blimey.
I couldn't imagine how many junior sides there was. I know there was a hell of a lot.
And so you work your way through, you get into the East Hull team, and then you get scouted, don't you?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I was actually playing for East Hull's National Conference side when I was 15.
Blimey, and, that's got to be some sort of record, hasn't it, mate?
I remember my first, I was 15, we Beverley and East Hull merged, and it was called Beverley East Hull, and the old big Len Casey was the coach, and he took myself and Jamie Bourville, who ended up going to OKR, he took us both up to Warnley Central, and was 15. So it was a bit of an eye-opener going to Cumbria as a 15-year-old, but certainly put me in good stead for what was ahead.
It's always Cumbria where you tend to get chucked in, isn't it? I've heard this of quite a lot of people.
I think it's maybe the lack of availability of the players. Not wanting to go there, which is a shame, because for me it's my favourite trip. It's not so much there, it's up the journey back, which is my favourite bit.
We always used to call it working tinnitus.
Yeah, Workington. It happens, and it still happens to the day, and I'm sure it will still be happening in 30, 40 years' time.
So you get scouted by Hull, you go along there, you get signed by them, and you're made captain of their academy side, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I played 1 year first, and then the second year I ended up as the captain, which obviously was a great honour. And at the same time, I went on a full-time contract for 2 years, stayed as captain, moved on to the reserves, captain of the reserves, which was pretty good for a 19-year-old kid. And then I went back a year part-time, as it didn't quite work out, and I finished my fourth season, and then I decided I needed to move on, really.
Now, who was in front of you from a first team point of view that you was trying to dislodge you at the time?
Well, at the time I was a halfback, so it was only Paul Cook and Richard Orm. So,
oh, is that Tony all?
Tony Casper Smith. Only three England internationals, so it wasn't too shabby, I suppose.
What did being around those players teach you, really, I suppose, from an early age?
Well, just the professionalism, especially around, you know, Tony Smith, Richard Orr, Jason Smith, when I was full-time with guys like that. Lee Jackson, the great hooker, was probably the most professional worker I've ever come across.
I still remember that cheeky one where he hid the ball under his... he hid the ball...
Just leave, against Leeds, I know.
Yeah, and got a quick tap away. I remember watching that thinking, he's done well to get rid of that. I don't know how he's managed that. From Hull, you ended up then taking a step into semi-professional rugby league then, didn't you, with Doncaster. What was that like, your first season there?
My reserve season finished, and I ended up going on loan. There was still 4 weeks left of the National League. I think it was National League back then, was it? And there was still four games left, and I had a couple of friends at Doncaster, and I was talking to them, and they just said, would you fancy it? Go, yeah, I'll speak to the coach. And next thing I know, the great weight, Cindy Nellis, is on the phone to me, seeing if I want to go on loan for 4 weeks. So I took that opportunity, I just loved it. So I ended up staying there. A year later.
So can you remember that first team debut then? You know, so you're there as a kid.
I can't, it's very hard not to. As it was the first week leading up, it was beginning of the week, I had a few friends at OKR, and I was arranging a night out. I was going to go watch Doncaster v OKR on the Sunday, and then we were going to have a night out afterwards. and as it was, I ended up playing in it against a lot of my friends at OKR and the team that I supported, so it's pretty hard to forget.
So that really is one for the memory banks, that, isn't it? Coming up against the across town neighbours.
Yeah, across town neighbours, but my team, you know, I grew up an OKR supporter, an OKR ball boy, but at the time when it was all getting signed up, Gales Hull was a sub league side, and there was a lot of competition at OKR Academy at the time. There were some very good kids, so I chose Hull.
Did the family ever forgive you?
It actually turned them all into OSC fans, because there wasn't really rugby fans a great deal. And now I've got my brother and my sister who die as Hull fans, and they say it's my fault. Well, they say it's for me. Whenever, obviously, derby time comes, we have a bit of banter, and they always throw that it's my fault why they're Hull fans, because they started coming to watch me and went from there, really.
So then you did the full 2005 season with Doncaster. Now, Doncaster were really competitive, weren't they, that year?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Like I say, I had 4 games on loan. I played at halfback all the way through junior, through academy, reserves. But after speaking to the coaches at Hull, they said the more chance of me making it professionally would be as a 9. So after playing a couple of games for Doncaster at halfback, I spoke to Cindy Nellis and just asked him if I could ever go at hooker. And I'd never really played there before, but he gave me a go against Batley. It was actually a bottom playoff game. The loser goes down, the winner stays up. And he threw me in at the deep end, and I played the full 80 and got man of the match and absolutely loved it. So I signed on for the 2005 season as a hooker and went from there, really. And we had a great side. Graham Mulroy, Andy Fisher, you know, people like that. It was, you know, we had a really, really good year.
I'm just thinking how mad you was actually moving from being defending an edge as a halfback to then chucking yourself in the middle and having guys running at you for 80 minutes.
It was always one of my strengths, to be fair. With me always being one of the smallest, all the way through growing up, you tend to get targeted, so you've got to learn pretty sharpish, or otherwise, you know, it's going to be a solid time every time you go play. So, and I absolutely loved it, and I wouldn't have changed it for the world, you know. Being in the middle and the defensive side, it's the best part of the game for me.
I'm intrigued as well, because after your stint at Doncaster, you had a year in Australia. What was that like, and how did that come about?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Obviously, you know, every rugby league kid growing up wants to go to Australia. And back in 2004, I took my mum to see her brother, which is my uncle, and before, because she was an ill lady, and then when I was there, I was just like, I want to live here, you know. It was just a dream, and I got home and spoke to a few friends and booked to go a year later without actually having anywhere to stay, a team to anything. So I had it booked, and I spoke to Anthony Seibold, who's to the current Brisbane Broncos coach now. He was playing OKR at the time. And he put me in touch with somebody, and we just went from there, really.
So Cudgeon Hornets, I mean, it's not a team that sort of rolls off the tongue, is it? What was that like? What was the standard of competition?
It was just a local side on the Gold Coast. We played the Northern Rivers competition, which was, I would probably say, if we, that side played now, it'd probably be competing in the playoffs for National Conference League.
All right, okay, so a real decent standard then.
So yeah, it was a decent standard. We got a little bit of money out of it, and I really looked after myself and my missus. And it was the former Leeds Rhinos playing Jamie Matthew.
Oh yeah, the prop forward.
The prop forward, yeah, he was the coach. So obviously he'd been to England, so he knew what the experience was travelling to the other side of the world, and he really looked after us. And you know, we went on and won the grand final, which was, you know, the only time I've ever won a grand final, so it's really, really good memories. And also got selected to play on the rep side, the Northern Rivers rep side. So we travelled to Central Coast and to Grafton and played some really, really, really good sides.
Right, I mean, these are places that I've heard of in passing, you know, Grafton. I think, is it like the Grafton Phantoms or something like
Grafton
that?
Grafton Ghosts.
The Grafton Ghosts, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of ex-NRL players and stuff go back to them sort of clubs and play a coach at the back end of their career. You know, there's a little bit of money in it for them, and it's a good stepping stone for, you know, for the careers, for the coaching careers.
So from there, you end up coming back to England and playing for Sheffield Eagles. How did that move come about?
Obviously, I came back. I knew I was coming back at the end of 2006. And so I put a few feelers about and spoke to a few text messages to my mates, and I got a phone call off Ray Green, who I used to know quite well from Doncaster, Pete Green's dad. And he was involved at Sheffield at the time. And I said, would you be interested in, you know, coming down? And so I said, yeah, no problem. And obviously Mark Ashton rang me and we were in to have a chat and a meeting, and there's a few Hull lads already down there. So pretty much just went from there, really.
And that was a pretty good season for you as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes, it was. It was really good. It was my main breakthrough season, I would say. We'd just been promoted from League One to the Premiership or whatever it was back then. And I started the season sort of second fiddle to Paul Pickering, who was a Hull lad, but luckily enough for me, I ended the season, you know, first choice, and really enjoyed my time.
If I remember rightly as well, that season, I think Sheffield lost the first sort of 7 or 8 games and were looking like they were heading back down. And then they played Lee on a Friday night and absolutely bounced Lee, and then just went from strength to strength for the rest of the season.
His memory's better than mine. I don't remember too many of the results. I remember a lot of the lads, obviously, that I played with
it. Yeah.
At the times, but I can't remember too much about that season.
Okay, no. Well,
it would have been years ago for me.
let's sort of say, because I mean, you had a second chance to go over to Australia.
Yeah.
And you played in a different competition then, didn't you?
Yeah, I actually had discussions with the team in Australia about going back, with the coach, got in touch with me to see if I'd be interested. But at the time I was negotiating a new contract with Sheffield, and so I spoke to Sheffield and I told them, look, I'm maybe going back to Australia. But it all depends on visas, because you can only have one visa. So Mark was really, really understanding and said, look, sign with us pre-season. If it comes off, then I'll release you. And so the team that I was at, Cudgeon Hornets, they'd actually the full open-air setup actually moved to a site called Bilambo Jets, which is just a little place outside of Cudgeon, really. I mean, the full open air set up, so it was all the same players, the same coach.
Oh, right, okay.
But it was just the other side of the border, because where I was right on the New South Wales Queensland border, so they ended up playing in the Gold Coast competition.
And was that a similar sort of standard to the one that you played in the Northern Rivers, it was
pretty much similar. It's a reserve grade to the Queensland Cup, so you're playing like Burley Bears reserves and, you know, and teams like that. So it was a good good standard.
So did that put you sort of in the eyes, or put different players as well in the eyes of other NRL clubs potentially for being picked up?
Yes, certainly. I actually spoke to a couple of clubs was in 2006 was interested in me maybe being going on trial to them, but at the time it just wasn't right for me. You know, I lost my mum in 2006 and I need to be at home with the family, and that was one of the main reasons I wanted to get back out there. to try and have another crack. But I went back out there, and it just wasn't the same. The rugby was great, the lads was great, but I just wanted to be at home really, my friends and family. So I finished that season, and obviously just headed home.
And came back to Doncaster.
Yeah, back to Doncaster. I think if I remember rightly, Tony Miller, I think, was in charge, and he'd been involved around the place before. And he just offered me a contract straight up, and wanted me to be starting nine, so I couldn't turn it down. So I started the season there. Didn't finish it, but I started the season there.
I was about to say, I mean, you've obviously impressed people going along, because, I mean, if you then had Mark Aston knocking on your door again, saying, hey, why don't you come back to Sheffield with me? I mean, that's saying something for you as well, isn't it?
Yeah, what happened halfway through the season, Doncaster went financially, tits up. And
oh, yeah, they started off full-time, didn't they, that season? Is
that
right?
That was the year before.
Oh, was it?
That was 2008, yeah. But they went back part-time, and they offered a lot of players a lot of money. And halfway through the season, we went financially, So we all had to sign a new contract where we had reduced wages, but if clubs came in, we could leave. And, the likes of Kyle Briggs left, Pete Green left, And as it was, Sheffield, Mark phoned me back up, see if I'd be interested in going back. So I couldn't pass that up. A lot of people had left Doncaster, and as much as the good people were, I couldn't, have 50, 60 points put on me every week. Mm. So I agreed to leave. And the good thing was, I played for Doncaster one Sunday, and then I got released. I signed for Sheffield, and Sod's World of Sheffield played the week after. Doncaster.
Rugby League ironies, eh?
Yes, yeah. I played for Doncaster one week, and played against them the week after, which was certainly different.
I bet that made it a bit spicy for you on the terraces, didn't it? Where the guys that have been cheering for you were suddenly against you.
Yeah, I got a load of crap. It was actually at Featherstone's ground. Doncaster played two games at Featherstone ground because Keepmark was getting reseeded, I think, or pitch relayed. So I played for Doncaster at Featherstone's ground, and then I played against them for Sheffield. So you can imagine what it's like at Featherstone. They're on your back, and we went there and we put quite a few points on them, but I got plenty of abuse, but I don't mind that.
I'd imagine 2010 would probably be, in a way, your favourite season, getting selected to the Dream Team, Championship, competing right up at the top of it.
Oh, yes, certainly. I would say it's my fondest season. Played in every single game, scored 20 tries, I think it was, in the season. Get selected in the Championship Dream Team is probably my greatest individual honour, and I think we only ended up one game off the grand final. We got beat by Halifax quite comfortably, which is a shame at the time. We was doing really well, but we got beat by Halifax at Halifax last major semi-final.
Halifax, Barrow and Featherstone were like the three main forces, weren't they?
Yeah, there was, yeah. Obviously, Barrow was getting a lot of money thrown at them. But I think we looked after them at Don Valley. We beat them at Don Valley. And I think we beat Lee in the playoffs at Lee.
Thanks for that.
Yeah. And it was one of my fondest games, actually. I'll never forget. I think Mrs. Talia Papa broke his ankle in that game. And was really busted, but we came through, and then there was a lot of spice in the Halifax game because there was a lot going on with Sam Barlow and his transfer from Sheffield. And a lot going on, but they just turned up on the day and just did a real good job on us.
How did you move to France come about then?
Well, it was actually at the Championship Dream Team launch sort of evening. I was just got talking to a lot of people, and was talking to the guy, the chairman or whatever, I think it was the chairman of Toulouse, and he said he'd be sorted for next year, but not yet. There's a lot of clubs was interested at the time, and he says, oh, well, we would be interested in talking to you. And so I said, yeah, okay. So at the time, I then thought, well, I might need some help. So I went and got a manager, player manager, I got Gary Wilkinson in to help me out, who used to be a former coach of mine at Hull Reserves and Doncaster and Sheffield. Mm-hmm. I gave him a ring and we had a chat, and he took a lot of phone calls off a lot of different people. But the Toulouse head coach, Gilles, and the president, they both flew over from France just to meet me, which I was really, really impressed with. We met him in a hotel in Manchester, and they pretty much sold it to me. You know, going to live in another part of the world, another great experience. Good money. I won't say that it was good money, but it was a challenge. I couldn't speak a word of French. It was the only lesson I didn't do at school, because I was never going to go to France.
And very strange that you ended up there.
Yeah, well, again, it goes back, you know, it's so boring, isn't it? If I'd have been real good at French, I'd have never ended up there, would I? But it was a challenge. Everything, going to the shops was a challenge, but you know, I can't fault the lads, you know. There was five Australians, and Jed Cochran all played with Sheffield, and five of Australians, so it certainly helped that way.
And to be fair, I mean, that's where our paths first crossed as well, when I actually got speaking to you, because while she was over there in Toulouse, I'd always sort of seen you and sort of seen you play games against Lee, but we actually met in the bar there, the Melting Pot, which I'd imagine would probably be the best place for at least being able to speak your mother tongue.
Yeah, it ended up being my local, and I was quite a regular in there, just because I didn't have any Sky TV, and obviously it was an Irish pub, and they used to put the rugby league on for me every Friday night. So I used to go in there on a Friday night, obviously playing on a Saturday. I'd always come across the away supporters, so we'd always have a natter. They'd always try and buy me a beer, which I'd say I'd have to decline and say, get me one tomorrow after the game. But, you know, I always had a good chat with them, and I met some good people. I was best of friends on the Friday night, and they used to shout abuse at me on the Saturday night.
But as soon as full time went, they would have bought you a drink, surely.
Yeah, quite often not. There was always a beer waiting for me in the bar, which I won't knock. You know, rugby league supporters and people are, you know, they're some of the greatest people in the world for me.
So I mean, I'd imagine that being a fantastic experience in a way, though.
Yeah, unbelievable. You know, to say I've played in France as well as Australia and England, it's, you know, I feel privileged. Not many people get that chance.
So then you came back and you played for Dewsbury. Bit of a difference, I suppose.
Yeah. Obviously, I came back. Toulouse at the time went back to the French League, and I wasn't too keen on that. And I had a wedding booked for the 2012, so I decided to come back. And again, I had a few different choices, but after meeting Warren Jowett, he really sold it to me, you know, and offered me the captaincy to sign, and so I signed there. Yeah. Well, nearly three quarters of the season there before I had a little bit of a falling out with Warren, and went our separate ways.
It's a shame when that type of thing happens, but I suppose it's inevitable at some points during somebody's career that they're going to fall out with whoever the coach was.
Yeah, I've had heated discussions with pretty much every coach I've had. I'm quite an opinionated person, and if I think the coach is doing something wrong or doing something right, I'll tell them either way. And Warren didn't really like that. A lot of coaches, you know, like it. Especially, you know, Mark Aston at Sheffield, he was fantastic. If he had anything to say, you know, he'd listen and take it on board. But Warren, it was Warren's way or the highway sort of thing, and I ended up on the highway back to Hull.
And I love this later section of your career, because you just seem to... I wouldn't have liked to have had a second-hand car off you, put it that way, because you certainly clocked up the miles, didn't you? Gloucestershire All-Golds, Oxford, Newcastle Thunder.
Yeah, I left Dewsbury halfway through the year, and I took coaching role up at East Hull, which was a big step. At the age of 28, I started coaching National Conference, and that was a big step, and I had a year and a half there coaching that, which, you know, I absolutely loved. But then an old friend of mine, Barry, to give me a call seeing if I fancied going back playing, and after speaking to Brad and Lionel Hurst, that who was at the Old Goals, you know, they really, really did sell it to me, and I absolutely loved my year there. I absolutely loved it.
So tell us a little bit more about that. Was that you know, that time? Because, I mean, that's a brand new club coming through at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think there was I think I joined the second season that they'd just come through. You know, it was a long way. Well, I used to go down there on a Saturday night, and if it was at home, I'd stay over and the Friday, Saturday, and play on the Sunday, then head back. But again, there was another couple of lads from the Yorkshire area, so I wasn't just travelling on my own. And we've played quarter of the season, and unfortunately Brad got the sack, which was it was tough to set for me. He was the main reason I went back. I used to play with Brad at Sheffield, and he got me back out of retirement. But then they brought in Steve McCormack, which was absolutely fantastic. You know, he was still Scotland coach. He'd done a hell of a lot in the game. And me and Steve sat down, and we had a real good chat. And he was absolutely, one of the best coaches I've played under with Steve. And he taught me a lot about coaching as well. Obviously, I explained I was into coaching, and he sat down and he did some video work with me. And, it was fantastic. So, I really enjoyed that year at Gloucester.
Because, by this stage, he was combining both playing semi-professionally with coaching at amateur level. That's a big commitment on your time, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It was a challenge, but, I have a very, very, very understanding wife. and I think she likes me being out the house as much as I do. And she knows I love rugby league, and she knows it's my life, and she never wants wins, But I'd play, coach, rugby every day of the week if I could.
From Gloucestershire, you went over to Oxford then. By that stage, had Tony Benson gone?
Yes, Tony had gone. I left Gloucester at the end of 2014, and I started coaching at Hull Dockers. And I was coaching there, and there was short on players, so I played a few games there. And then halfway through, Tim Rumford gave me a call. Just out the blue, really, but he had a couple of lads at Oxford playing, and I played at Gloucester with Danny Thomas and Matt Barlow. And Tim gave me a call, see if I fancied having a go, and it was a bit of a crazy setup, really. Wasn't quite well run as Gloucester. We used to train in Cass. There was about 10, 11 of us used to train in Cass one night a week, and then travel down on a weekend for a game, which is a bit strange, really, and I don't think it worked as well as some of the other expansion clubs.
It's almost like having a gypsy club, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it was just run completely wrong, and it's probably why they are now, not having a club.
I suppose all these things, though, they all feed into your own experience and I suppose your own coaching philosophies as well, do they? Because you're sort of looking and you're thinking, well, that didn't work, so I'm not going to implement that in where I'm at.
I probably learn more about how not to do things, as much as how to do things. I think you take as much out of a bad experience as you do a good experience. But I played under a lot of coaches, and I played under some really, really good coaches, and I played under two or three not so good coaches. It's all an experience. And after going to Australia and France, and then getting a chance to go play at the expansion clubs like Gloucester, Oxford, and Newcastle, it's fantastic.
So your final professional club was Newcastle. Now, what was that spell like there? Because you was also an assistant coach, wasn't you?
Yeah. I wasn't really gonna play in 2016. I've pretty much had enough after Oxford, but then Mike Grady got the assistant coach's job at Newcastle, and I got to know Mike quite well through the time when he was at South Wales, and we used to play against each other. We used to talk a lot, and he phoned me up and said, "Do you fancy go?" And I went as a player. Then unfortunately, Mike had to leave because he got a new job, and I say unfortunately, it was good for me because then they offered me the assistant coach's job, which I fully enjoyed, and I thought it was going to be the first step on my ladder. But then I decided to retire halfway through the season to stop playing, just because I wasn't really enjoying playing. I wasn't playing very good, but I was playing every week because I was on the coaching staff. And that's, it wasn't fair. So I've been thinking for a few weeks, I'm not enjoying it. And we ended up playing York. Magic Weekend. We used to play on Friday Night Lights, and played on the Saturday, on the Friday night, and then I woke up on the Saturday, and I just didn't want to play anymore. So I said to my missus, you know, I'm stopping playing, I'm retiring. She went, yeah, I've heard that load of time before. But anyway, it came out to Tuesday for training, and I was at work, and I just, well, I don't want to go tonight. So I phoned the head coach up, Mick Mantelli at the time, and I just says, Mick, I think I'm going to retire from the game. And he went, why? So I explained the reasons, you know, I wasn't enjoying it. It was becoming a chore having to train, and I wasn't playing very well, but like I said, I was still playing, which wasn't fair on some of the other lads. And so he offered me the job to stay as an assistant coach, so I took it on for a few weeks, and then obviously we had to start talking about finances, because Newcastle was a long way to go, and a lot of my money was on the playing side. And anyway, I spoke to the club, and it just wasn't like financially for me to go to Newcastle four times a week for what they was offering. So I just took a step back and had a bit of time away from the game.
Which is a shame, really, isn't it? But they always say a change is as good as a rest. So you made the right decision in the end, didn't you? Because you're still involved in the game, and you jumped back in at Hull Dockers.
Yeah, I took a step back and stayed a few months out, and then Hull Dockers got back in touch with me. So, you know, he fancy coming back, helping coach, and stuff. Yeah, right. So I thought I was going to go back and help coach, but again, there was a few short on numbers, and they turned to me, and I couldn't say no. And then I started playing. So I played all last season. No, half of last season, 2017 season, but mainly coached. And then decided just wanted to play last season, 2018. So I took coaching out of it and just said, I'm just going to become a player. And I played last season, and I absolutely loved it.
You look like you really enjoyed it last year. I mean, you was a regular try scorer.
Yeah, you know, I enjoyed it. I had no pressure on me. You know, I was playing National Conference Division 2, and I was turning up two nights a week to train and turn up on a Saturday. I had knowledge about coaching, about where you're going to find players from, and you know, and they're a great set of lads at Dockers. And yeah, you know, I like to score a try, and I ended up joint top try scorer in the full division, which is a pretty good personal accolade, especially for a hooker. I ended up scoring 23 tries in 18 games, so yeah, it was good.
So what does 2019 hold in store for you, mate?
Just exactly, I'm just going to play again. I'm going to play at Hull Dockers. We're at pretty much becoming the end of the pre-season, I can gladly say. But yeah, I'm just going to play at Hull Dockers again. I've got a new head coach, so I'm not coaching, but I'm trying to help him out as much as I can, because he's not coached before. But it's pre-season's going really good. We're getting really good numbers. Boys are working really hard. And just looking forward to the season starting in 3 or 4 weeks' time.
I've seen a couple of your tweets saying that you're inspired by what the lads are doing in pre-season training over there.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's fantastic. You know, I'm 35 years of age. And, you know, when I'm training with 17, 18-year-old kids, it's... I'm keeping up. And I'm still up there with... I would say I'm in the top five of the fittest at the club. But you know, any kid that wants to turn up and, you know, and run up hills on a, you know, on a 7 o'clock on a Tuesday night, they're not getting paid. You know, the other week it was snowing, and you know, I think we had 18 or 19 kids turn up to run up the hills on the side of the road. You know, it's, you know, what more would you want than to be running up, you know, in the snow with 18, 19 year olds?
So my thanks to Craig for his time there. Great to hear about his career. And you can still see him strutting his stuff for the Hull Dockers this season in National Conference League Division 2. And they get their journey underway on Saturday the 2nd of March with a game against close rivals, near neighbours, as he mentioned there, the newly promoted Beverley side. So it's going to be an interesting campaign. Best of luck to Dockers, best of luck to everybody, and we'll have another one of these interviews very, very soon.
Keeping you up to date with everything Rugby League, this is the Final Hooter on Radio General.